Welcome to another interesting episode of Technogram, Reddington's podcast channel, where we bring unique and interesting stories to the forefront. Our guest today is a visionary leader with a career spanning over four decades. Vishwanath Palasena is known for his infectious energy and personality. Prior to being the CEO of Reddington Middle East and Africa, one of his roles also included being the managing director at HP for the Philippines market. He has a knack for inspiring teams and building strong relationships. Let's explore his fascinating journey and discover the secrets to his extraordinary success. Thank you, Vish, for being here.
Pleasure.
And welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Technogram is a show where I try to bring the stories of the tech ecosystem from the region to the forefront. So whether it is the technology or business or sport motivation or case study, or just generally about how life has been over the last few decades for you, I would like to have like a candid conversation about how your journey has been and inspire us all.
Fantastic. Looking forward.
So I just find out today you complete 40 years in the industry, 40 years anniversary of your work life.
Yeah.
That's an amazing achievement. Congratulations.
Thank you. It seems so amazing, you know, seems so long ago when you say four decades.
Yeah.
But feels like it's just gone by so nicely and smoothly. And I don't feel like I've been in the industry that long.
So, you know, they say time flies when you enjoy doing what you do.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So since it's been 40 years, right? I'm interested to know what was day zero like in the tech world for you.
The first job that I took was to actually, you know, going forward from where I was in my journey studying,
mm-hmm.
which was all about applied electronics when I learned. And my initial interest was to join the industry, technology industry overall, where, you know, I would get to work in a really technical side of things. But as I came into interviewing a few roles, I found very nice opportunities coming up more in a place where I could make a difference, actually taking technology to the market, which was all about selling and marketing and things like that.
So do you remember your first day at work?
I remember my first day at work, walking into a young organization somewhere south of, south of Madras, north of Madras. It used to be called Madras those days, Chennai.
Mm-hmm.
Walking into the young organization, which is part of a big group of company. And it was about them being so eager to receive me and me so eager to join them. It was a phenomenal experience. I still remember walking into the then managing director of that company,
mm-hmm.
Mr. M.M. Murugappan, who was such a dynamic young person who's still in the industry today, but in different industries. But it was his pet project to start an electronic wing of his business. So in those days, it was not called technology those days. It was called electronics.
Right.
It was called electronics. It was called communications. It was called computer. It was called instrumentation. It was all of those things. But it was not put together and called as a tech industry,
yeah,
as it is today called.
I believe you were into testing equipments, right?
Yeah, that was, test equipments is what I started working on. And these are, you know, test equipments are those which are actually used to make tech products.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are, you know, you get involved in an earlier cycle of a product introduction, meaning that these things go into actually design and development of products which actually come and make the difference to the people later on. So that was the industry I got into, and it was very, you know, really cutting edge those days and working for the best companies in the world.
Fascinating. So, you know, in the tech world, there have been like the evolution of technology has been marked by distinct phases. For example, the Industrial Revolution, then the Electric Revolution, and the Digital Revolution. And today we find ourselves in the world of AI. So similarly, what was an inflection point in your life?
So the inflection, from a technology perspective, for me, actually moving from a career perspective was moving from a pure tech, pure electronics and a pure technology field,
mm-hmm.
of testing and measurement and design and development and all of that, into moving into computing, into consumption of computers and the way they were used was a big difference in my career as such.
That was the turning point.
Yeah, that was a big turning point to actually go away from pure electronics to actually taking it to computers more and computing and application of the computers into different markets. Suddenly, the market size of where I was involved went from being large equipment sold into niche products to actually being consumed at scale. So imagine that I used to have customers who were using test equipments which were in the hundreds or maybe at best thousands. Suddenly I went into an industry which was actually being used by millions and impacting the life of millions of people. And that was a big transformation for me to see how big the market was and how much the influence I could play in that market. Suddenly, for example, my targets at the time or the business ambitions at that time went from like tens of million dollars to suddenly to $200, $300, $400 million of business that I had to do. Mm-hmm. So that was a huge shift in the career and huge shift in the things that I got to do as well. Okay. Went from a lot of direct sales into business management and things like that.
So the way things are today at the workplace, it's so different back to when you must have started and over the last so many years as well. So what has been one of the most difficult things that you have faced, whether it's to do with organizations or with people?
There were tough decisions that I took personally for myself into furthering my career, where I had to go from a very developed market in a developed country situation that I used to work around, like in Singapore, to actually going and working in an emerging market like in India and Delhi, that I had to go from and then from Delhi into an even smaller town to work and make this. So personally, I had to make those choices to book, but every choice for me, everything that I did actually worked out very well. The toughest decision that I had to do in my career at that time, around 2002-2003, which is just about 20 years ago, was to actually dismantle the entire channel network that I had set up.
Okay.
You know, I had set up and gone and set up an entire channel network for a series of partners for selling attracting customers and then giving them an experience and then selling the HP's, at the time, HP's latest products that we were bringing for the consumer industry.
You were with HP at that
time. I was with HP at that time. But I had set that up, and it took a while to recognize that we couldn't make money in India doing that, and the technology was probably a little early. Then the management decided to move on and focus more on the commercial side of business rather than the consumer.
Okay.
So the toughest job that I had to do was to dismantle that entire channel network, which I had put together for a period of 2-3 years, to actually dismantle that and, you know, meet every partner that who had actually, many of them had actually come to bet with HP those days.
Right.
Saying that, we will go into the retail outlets with you, we'll set up outlets. So for them to go back and tell them that we are working on alternatives, but to see how how to help them come out of that situation and dismantle the entire channel partner network was the toughest thing that I did ever. And I don't think I want to be doing that again. Ever.
So you must have
been very difficult.
A lot of partners, right? Must have
there was like a channel team of about 250 partners that we had set across India at that time.
Right. Okay. That sounds like a very tough situation.
Very tough situation it was, actually.
Okay. So how did you kind of come up, like how did you manage that situation?
The best way you could do it, you know, you can do never do, if you do things, if you do death by 100 slashes, it's always painful. It is always good to do it clear and neat, and then have a very clear exit strategy for everybody.
Right.
And then we went about it meticulously. At the same time, we took the decision and it was very clear about how we're going to go to it, we worked on alternatives for each one of them. we worked a business model that was presented to each one of them as an alternative where they could use their existing infrastructure and still be in business, albeit without us.
Right.
So that was a good planning and execution, and done very quickly and executed within a few months. That was one which I did very well, and I learned a lot from it. And many of those people whom I partnered with and also had to walk away from still remember me for the very good ways in which we separated. Even in separation, you can make Even in separation, you can build relationships.
That's amazing. So I introduced you as somebody who is known for building strong relationships.
Yes. Makes a lot of difference and to everything. And that's the only thing that lasts a long time over as technology grows and everything else grows. As long as you're keeping the relationship going in any situation.
Yeah. So business is all about people, right?
More it's than all about people. Else.
Yeah.
Any business that keeps a customer with you is the best business to be with you.
All right. So you have been in various locations. So do you see a big difference in the leadership styles when you compare one region to another? Or because today we are a very globalized world, are all the base challenges the same? Like whether it's to do with organizations or people, processes?
See, I worked for a company called HP, as you know, for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
This is a company which ushered in the concept of an open office in the 1980, 1990 time frame. They brought in the concept of open office, and they brought in a concept of people being the most important part of an organization.
Mm-hmm.
So within the organization, the management style that we experienced toward, in spite of being in multiple locations in multiple countries, within the organization of HP, we saw that the styles were similar. In the sense, individually people may be different,
yeah,
but the guidelines for an organization generally directed a group to behave in a way which is acceptable and embodying the values of the organization.
Of the company, okay.
But the management styles are very different in different countries.
Mm-hmm.
How people work in Singapore, for example, is very, very different from how people worked in Philippines and how they work in India or how they work in the Middle East. And Middle East, when I say, is Middle East is 30, 40 countries,
yes,
right? So it's been tremendously different in terms of style. And the leadership styles, when it comes to it, I've seen all sorts of leaders, because I don't know if I can count this, if I counted this well, but I have had, at least in my own personal experience, worked for more than 40, in my 40 years of working, I would have probably had more than 27 to 30 managers that I worked for, different types.
Okay.
So the kind of leadership styles I've seen is amazing. I've gone from very autocratic, despotic kind of leaders to leaders who are very, very patronizing leaders, to ones who are, you know, work on consensus, to ones who are very clear and candid about what they want to get done and who manage by objectives and things like that. So I've learned from each one of them and benefited from them.
So, what kind of leader do you think you are?
Oh, I like to think of myself as a leader who likes to, be very inclusive when it comes to sharing ideas and taking inputs from everything. But I like to be also seen as a leader who's decisive when it needs to be done, when one needs to be. The most important thing is I want to be open. I want to be open as a leader. Open meaning not, and the sense of openness, it comes, starts with being physically open, meaning that you have your doors to your office always open. And when you force yourself to do that, your mind also gets open. So I want to be an open-minded person to listening more and getting more inputs to be done. But when it comes to getting things done, at some point of time, we got to agree and move along. And that's where I need to use a decisive part of my brain. Decisive part of my leadership trait to come to work for us, work for me and the organization. So I always believed in terms of a team being strong than every individual in the team to be strong.
Right.
So the idea is to have people who are strong in different things coming together, contributing to the weaknesses and or making up for the weaknesses that some of the team members don't have, perhaps. And that way we build a more rounded team, which is all strong within many aspects.
And then your journey with Reddington has brought you to the Middle East and Africa.
Yeah.
And to UAE specifically. And with you at its helm, Reddington has seen a lot of success. We have seen a lot of innovative go-to-markets. And in a sense, I would say that Reddington has reimagined itself under your leadership. And in fact, last year we did that event called Reimagine. So my question is, you must have had a vision when you took up this role. How far are we in your mind? How far are we in reaching that vision as per you?
So our company has this lofty ambition and a vision actually to be the tech integrator that we are, that we could play a role as. And importantly, address the technology friction that exists between innovation and adoption. So that's the journey that the company is on. Okay. From my perspective, the vision of what Reddington wants to be going forward is to be this company which has a combination of doing things very well for the current,
mm-hmm.
and then doing very good things very required for tomorrow, right, today, and also preparing for the day after. So it's in that we set ourselves as being what is our core strategy, and then we have a strategy to our core strategy, which is to be very good at the core, and then we have as a whole set of initiatives that we have that we put into growing into specific areas and creating incubation projects within the company, and then behaving as one Reddington altogether. When I came into Reddington, I saw Reddington having multiple business groups which are successful on their own, but they were not probably not leveraging each other with what they could do for each other. So the one Reddington part of it was very high in my priority to execute. I think we are well on the way of doing that very well. So one Reddington being ahead of the market all of the times, addressing the company's value systems and bringing that value system imbibed at all levels of the organization, taking that vision of reducing friction in the market to the next level, and all of that is in work in progress for us. And I would say that we are well into the projects of achieving it, but not there.
So I would like to have like a number here so that we can visualize and for the employees as well. So is it a 50%, 60%? Where are we?
I think we are like 50% of it. Okay. 50% of what we want to do. And I want to be humble there in saying that, you know, it's a hard journey. You know, it's to change an organization to be doing all of that is not easy. And I'm glad the way the team has responded to get to 50%. But knowing that there is still 50% up, more to do, mm-hmm. is the exciting part of being and working in anything. No, you know, having, I always say that, as I've heard from some leading business leaders in the world saying, high expectations is the key to everything. So I have high expectations of myself and also about everybody around us.
Okay, good to know that. So coming back to the channel. You must have met a lot of partners in your career as well as with your role at Reddington. So what do you think are the top three challenges that partners have today? And as Reddington, how are we helping them address it?
So the top three challenges are really for channel partners are actually how do they stay ahead of the game?
Mm-hmm.
That is one thing in terms of technology, being right on top of what is happening in the market, investing in the right place, making the current day-to-day work while being prepared for the future. Second thing is building capabilities. You know, every partner and technology as it is changing so much today requires newer and newer capabilities. And addressing the gaps, particularly relating to people, talent, and all of those things, the second part of the challenge. that partners have here. Third part of the thing is about the changing business models that are there. And the business models come with different financial requirements and risks and, you know, platforms and technology that comes along with that. So these are the three things that I think channel partners are faced with today. And for all of that, all of that coming together is, I can sum up to say that every channel partner wants or should be bigger than the sum total of what he is today and within his own capabilities and has to be seen as having the access to be much larger in terms of resources that they can command for themselves than what they own. So that's what Redington does today. Our job is to make every channel partner out there bigger than what they are, be it in terms of their knowledge and their ability to bridge the gap on technologies and then bringing together newer and newer solutions for their customers, or for the channel partners to get the right business models to go with, because things are going from like CapEx to OpEx and a lot of business models to consumption that is happening. How do they do it? How do they traverse this changing, business model scene that is happening out there? Third thing is about people themselves. Now, not everybody can get the right kind of talent all the time. So here it is that at Redington, we want to build a wide gamut of people, services that we can offer, starting from our marketing services that we do. So we guys do that so very well. And, helping our partners market themselves very, very well through our own branded programs and to going into, AI-enabled trainings that we can do for them or to, address specific financially stitched projects together every which way we want to help the channel partners.
I think you've nicely summarized the top three challenges. And in LinkedIn, yes, we do a lot of initiatives. But I guess for the partners, there is a lot to be done, and with the landscape evolving so much and so quickly, it's kind of hard to keep up, to stay ahead of the game, as you said.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so difficult. It's very difficult for us. It's very difficult for the channel partners. We rely a lot on our vendors to give us the support for the technology and all of that. But we bring it in, we assimilate, we cook it, and then we make it available to our incredible set of customers that we have. And across these wide geographies.
Yes. So with your wide expertise, how do you see the regional dynamics playing out? Because, Redington is a leader in emerging markets, and that's one of the toughest markets that we operate in. So, and in the recent past, there have been a lot of incidents where uncertainty has increased when it comes to business and everything. So how is Redington addressing this? And how are we helping our own partners as well to kind of navigate this landscape?
I think I mentioned that a bit earlier also when I talked about it, that the channel partners' challenges are these,
yes,
and how we are addressing them. From a region itself, if you look at it, you said it very well.
Yeah.
We are operating in a region where, as I say, we have a love-hate relationship with the oil prices. When the oil prices are good, the region that we are in, the Gulf states, they're all doing very well. Because money is coming in, the projects are there, they can look ahead to do what they need to do from growing their non-oil business, and therein comes technology, AI, all of those applications. So here it's about all of that. But when oil prices and everything else goes up like that,
mm-hmm,
in the more emerging markets of Africa, it becomes a problem with the availability of the cost going up and the impact of that. So here it's about digital transformation coming in to create new business models and new business revenues for the countries here, which are looking at non-oil revenues for them to bolster and lengthen their success, what their success into the next decades. But when it comes to the emerging market, it's about using the same technologies to actually leapfrog and solving real-world problems that they face today. So digitization, for example, in Africa could mean something very different from what digital transformation means to UAE, a developed nation like this. And how you can help them as distributors to navigate through these things And identifying those pitfalls for our partners and helping them navigate this is what keeps me awake and keeps me alive and keeps me helps me to thrive in this business here, in this region.
Talking about thriving and moving away from stressful conversations of regional politics, I know that you walk 5 kilometers almost daily when the weather permits.
At least.
Wow, that's quite regimental. Doing that on the daily.
Least bit required.
So what do you do in the summer? Because you cannot walk here, right?
I go early morning before the sun.
But you still do it outdoors?
Yeah. I still walk. As long as the temperature is not above 35 degrees in the morning before 6, I go.
And so how early do you wake up?
Around 5:30.
Okay. All right. So I think, I mean, that must be also giving you some space and time to reflect on business, life.
Yeah. It's always interesting to go for a walk in the morning because, you know, even if it's hot and humid outside, it just still gives you time to reflect on your own self. And sometimes, you know, look at people around, look at traffic sometimes, look at...
It gives you fresh perspective.
It gives you perspective. It gives you your me time that you sometimes require.
Right. So this fact about you that you love to walk is well known. So I'd like to know what is a little known fact about you that people are not too aware.
One of the things that I try and do always is to be unpredictable. I try to change things a lot. And
what do you,
I'm not
what do you mean by that?
Like I don't always do, you know, the same thing, same way, always, every day. Some days I have, for example, some days I have breakfast, some days I don't breakfast.
Oh, so your routine is...
No, I always don't stick to a routine.
Okay.
The only thing that I try to stick to is to actually get some exercise every day in some way, sort of, because that's physically required for you to stay well.
Mm-hmm.
But everything else, I try to break the routine. So I'm not sure if people have noticed that, but that's something, you know, not so much known about me, I guess.
Okay.
That I'm not a person of routine.
That's interesting. Yeah, I did not know this about you. Okay. Thank you, Vish. I mean, this has been a very insightful conversation. But before I let you go, something comes to my mind as we talked now. In one of your interviews when you were the managing director at HP during your few days, you mentioned a quote that has stuck with me. You had said there's no elevator to life and you have to take the stairs.
Yeah.
So how would you further articulate this to the youngsters joining the workforce today? Because from what we know, the Gen Zs and the Gen Alphas are all about instant gratification.
Yeah.
So how would you what are your thoughts?
You know, there are no elevators to success. They have to know that. And it's a grind. And if you have to climb the stairs. But when you get to the top, it's a nice feeling as well. But the other thing I want to add to and tell all of the youngsters or anybody for that matter is that it's not the destination that's so important, because it's the journey that's the more important thing. And every day you come to work and you're enjoying that day working, then work becomes so easy actually. And most of the time it starts by putting a smile on your face. And also coming with the attitude, always saying that you're not very busy. You could do a lot of things. So if you come with that aptitude and attitude into the market, into your job every day, youngsters will be very thinking that they have a boatload of time available for them to do everything. Because it's just the perspective of what you need to think. If you come and saying that you have a lot of things to do, you get bogged down by that. If you come back and say that I have a few things to do, I think I can get it done, and I have a lot more that I can look forward to do.
That's an interesting take, and I think that would be very helpful as well.
Absolutely. You know, as you're sitting here and I go out, and you'll think that, you know, it's going to be what, 5:30 now. Just imagine it's only 5:30.
Okay.
It's not like saying, oh, it's 5:30 already.
I think very often we are rushing from one thing to other and we're always on deadlines. So
and the perspective of thinking that it's already 5:30.
Mm-hmm.
You never think that it's only 5:30.
Yeah, that never happens.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
It's only 5:30. There's so much more to do.
Okay.
Actually, that's what it is.
All right. So thank you, Vish, for coming here.
Pleasure.
And it's only been one session of you here, so hope to have many more.
Look forward
at TechnoGram.
Fantastic.